Chapter 11. Space, and, pointing to a black object at some distance, asked Will if he saw that, yonder.
Yes, apostrophe, he replied.
What then?
Apostrophe, informing him abruptly that it was the gibbet, where he was to watch, they wished him good night in an extremely friendly manner, and ran back as fast as their feet would carry them.
Will walked boldly to the gibbet, and, glancing upwards when he came under it, saw certainly with satisfaction that it was empty, and that nothing dangled from the top, but some iron chains, which swung mournfully to and fro as they were moved by the breeze. After a careful survey of every quarter, he determined to take his station with his face towards the town, both because that would place him with his back to the wind, and because, if any trick or surprise were attempted, it would probably come from that direction in the first instance. Having taken these precautions, he wrapped his cloak about him, so that it left the handle of his sword free, and ready to his hand, and leaning against the gallows tree with his cap not quite so much on one side as it had been before, took up his position for the night. Second chapter of Mr. Pickwick's Tale. We left Will Marks leaning under the gibbet with his face towards the town, scanning the distance with a keen eye, which sought to pierce the darkness, and catch the earliest glimpse of any person or persons that might approach towards him. But all was quiet, and, save the howling of the wind as it swept across the heath in gusts, and the creaking of the chains that dangled above his head, there was no sound to break the sullen stillness of the night. After half an hour or so, this monotony became more disconcerting to Will than the most furious uproar would have been, and he heartily wished for some one antagonist with whom he might have a fair stand-up fight, if it were only to warm himself. Truth to tell, it was a bitter wind, and seemed to blow to the very heart of a man whose blood, heated but now with rapid writing, was the more sensitive to the chilling blast. Will was a daring fellow, and cared not a jot for hard knocks or sharp blades, but he could not persuade himself to move or walk about, having just that vague expectation of a sudden assault which made it a comfortable thing to have something at his back, even though that something were a gallows tree. He had no great faith in the superstitions of the age, still such of them as occurred to him did not serve to lighten the time, or to render his situation the more endurable. He remembered how witches were said to repair at that ghostly hour to churchyards and gibbets, and such like dismal spots, to pluck the bleeding mandrake or scrape the flesh from dead men's bones, as choice ingredients for their spells. How, stealing by night to lonely places, they dug graves with their fingernails, or anointed themselves, before riding in the air, with a delicate pomatum made of the fat of infants newly boiled. These, and many other fabled practices of a no less agreeable nature, and all having some reference to the circumstances in which he was placed, passed and repassed in quick succession through the mind of Will Marks, and adding a shadowy dread to that distrust and watchfulness which his situation inspired, rendered it, upon the whole, sufficiently uncomfortable. As he had foreseen too, the rain began to descend heavily, and driving before the wind in a thick mist, obscured even those few objects which the darkness of the night had before imperfectly revealed.
Look!
Apostrophe, apostrophe, shrieked a voice. Great heaven, it has fallen down, and stands erect, as if it lived. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the speaker was close behind him, the voice was almost at his ear. Will threw off his cloak, drew his sword, and darting swiftly round, seized a woman by the wrist, who, recoiling from him with a dreadful shriek, fell struggling upon her knees. Another woman, clad, like her whom he had grasped, in mourning garments, stood rooted to the spot on which they were, gazing upon his face with wild and glaring eyes that quite appalled him. Say, apostrophe, cried Will, when they had confronted each other thus for some time, what are ye? Apostrophe, apostrophe, say, what are you? Apostrophe, returned the woman, who trouble even this obscene resting place of the dead, and strip the gibbet of its honored burden? Where is the body?
apostrophe, he looked in wonder and affright from the woman who questioned him to the other whose arm he clutched. Where is the body? Apostrophe, apostrophe, repeated the questioner more firmly than before. You wear no livery which marks you for the hireling of the government. You are no friend to us, or I should recognize you, for the friends of such as we are few in number. What are you then, and wherefore are you here? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I am no foe to the distressed and helpless, apostrophe, said Will. Are ye among that number? Ye should be by your looks. Apostrophe, we are. Apostrophe, apostrophe, was the answer. Is it ye who have been wailing and weeping here under cover of the night? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Will. It is, apostrophe, replied the woman sternly, and pointing, as she spoke, towards her companion, she mourns a husband, and I a brother. Even the bloody law, that wreaks its vengeance on the dead, does not make that a crime, and if it did told, be alike to us who are past its fear of favor. Apostrophe, Will glanced at the two females, and could barely discern that the one whom he addressed was much the elder, and that the other was young, and of a slight figure. Both were deadly pale, their garments wet and worn, their hair disheveled and streaming in the wind, themselves bowed down with grief and misery, their whole appearance most dejected, wretched, and forlorn. A sight so different from any he had expected to encounter touched him to the quick, and all idea of anything but their pitiable condition vanished before it. I am a rough, blunt yeoman, apostrophe, said Will. Why I came here is told in a word. You have been overheard at a distance in the silence of the night, and I have undertaken a watch for axe or spirits. I came here expecting an adventure, and prepared to go through with any. If there be aught that I can do to help or aid you, name it, and on the faith of a man who can be secret and trusty, I will stand by you to the death. Apostrophe, how comes this gibbet to be empty? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked the elder female. I swear to you, apostrophe, replied Will, that I know as little as yourself. But this I know, that when I came here an hour ago or so, it was as it is now. And if, as I gather from your question, it was not so last night, sure I am that it has been secretly disturbed without the knowledge of the folks in yonder town. Bethink you, therefore, whether you have no friends in league with you, or with him on whom the law has done its worst, by whom these sad remains have been removed for burial. Apostrophe, the women spoke together, and Will retired a pace or two, while they conversed apart. He could hear them sob and moan, and saw that they wrung their hands in fruitless agony. He could make out little that they said, but between whiles he gathered enough to assure him that his suggestion was not very wide of the mark, and that they not only suspected by whom the body had been removed, but also whither it had been conveyed. When they had been in conversation a long time, they turned towards him once more. This time the younger female spoke. You have offered us your help? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I have. Apostrophe, and given a pledge that you are still willing to redeem? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes. So far as I may, keeping all plots and conspiracies at arm's length. Apostrophe, follow us, friend. Apostrophe, Will, whose self-possession was now quite restored, needed no second bidding, but with his drawn sword in his hand, and his cloak so muffled over his left arm, as to serve for a kind of shield without offering any impediment to its free action, suffered them to lead the way. Through mud and mire, and wind and rain, they walked in silence a full mile. At length they turned into a dark lane, where, suddenly starting out from beneath some trees, where he had taken shelter, a man appeared, having in his charge three saddled horses. One of these, his own apparently, in obedience to a whisper from the women, he consigned to Will, who, seeing that they mounted, mounted also. Then, without a word spoken, they rode on together, leaving the attendant behind. They made no halt, nor slackened their pace until they arrived near Putney. At a large wooden house which stood apart from any other they alighted, and giving their horses to one who was already waiting, passed in by a side door, and so up some narrow creaking stairs into a small paneled chamber, where Will was left alone. He had not been here very long, when the door was softly opened, and there entered to him a cavalier whose face was concealed beneath a black mask. Will stood upon his guard, and scrutinized this figure from head to foot. The form was that of a man pretty far advanced in life, but of a firm and stately carriage. His dress was of a rich and costly kind, but so soiled and disordered that it was scarcely to be recognized for one of those gorgeous suits which the expensive taste and fashion of the time prescribed for men of any rank or station. He was booted and spurred, and bore about him even as many tokens of the state of the roads as Will himself. All this he noted, while the eyes behind the mask regarded him with equal attention. This survey over, the cavalier broke silence. "Thou art young and bold, and wouldst be richer than thou art?" The two first I am, returned Will. "The last I have scarcely thought of. But be it so. Say that I would be richer than I am. What then?" "The way lies before thee now," replied the mask. "Show it me." "First let me inform thee, that thou wert brought here tonight lest thou shouldst too soon have told thy tale to those who placed thee on the watch." "I thought as much when I followed," said Will. "But I am no blab, not one."
"Good,"
returned the mask. "Now listen. He who was to have executed the enterprise of burying that body, which, as thou hast suspected, was taken down tonight, has left us in our need." Will nodded, and thought within himself that, if the mask were to attempt to play any tricks, the first eyelet hole on the left-hand side of his doublet, counting from the buttons up the front, would be a very good place in which to pink him neatly. "Thou art here, and the emergency is desperate. I propose his task to thee. Convey the body now coffined in this house, by means that I shall show, to the Church of St. Dunstan in London tomorrow night, and thy service shall be richly paid. Thou art about to ask whose corpse it is. Seek not to know. I warn thee, seek not to know. Felons hang in chains on every moor and heath. Believe, as others do, that this was one, and ask no further. The murders of state policy, its victims or avengers, had best remain unknown to such as thee." "The mystery of this service," said Will, "bespeaks its danger. What is the reward?" 100 golden unities," replied the cavalier. "The danger to one who cannot be recognized as the friend of a fallen cause is not great, but there is some hazard to be run. Decide between that and the reward."
"What if I refuse?"
said Will. "Depart in peace, in God's name," returned the mask in a melancholy tone, "and keep our secret, remembering that those who brought thee here were crushed and stricken women, and that those who bade thee go free could have had thy life with one word, and no man the wiser." Men were readier to undertake desperate adventures in those times than they are now. In this case the temptation was great, and the punishment, even in case of detection, was not likely to be very severe, as Will came of a loyal stock, and his uncle was in good repute, and a passable tale, to account for his possession of the body, and his ignorance of the identity might be easily devised. The cavalier explained that a coveted cart had been prepared for the purpose, that the time of departure could be arranged, so that he should reach London Bridge at dusk, and proceed through the city after the day had closed in, that people would be ready at his journey's end to place the coffin in a vault without a minute's delay, that officious inquirers in the streets would be easily repelled by the tale, that he was carrying for interment the corpse of one who had died of the plague, and in short showed him every reason why he should succeed, and none why he should fail. After a time they were joined by another gentleman, masked like the first, who added new arguments to those which had been already urged. The wretched wife too, added her tears and prayers to their calmer representations, and in the end, will, moved by compassion and good nature, by a love of the marvelous, by a mischievous anticipation of the terrors of the Kingston people when he should be missing next day, and finally, by the prospect of gain, took upon himself the task, and devoted all his energies to its successful execution. The following night, when it was quite dark, the hollow echoes of Old London Bridge responded to the rumbling of the cart which contained the ghastly load, the object of Wilmark's care. Sufficiently disguised to attract no attention by his garb, Will walked at the horse's head, as unconcerned as a man could be who was sensible that he had now arrived at the most dangerous part of his undertaking, but full of boldness and confidence. It was now 8 o'clock. After 9, none could walk the streets without danger of their lives, and even at this hour, robberies and murder were of no uncommon occurrence. The shops upon the bridge were all closed, the low wooden arches thrown across the way were like so many black pits, in every one of which ill-favored fellows lurked in knots of 3 or 4, some standing upright against the wall, lying in wait, others skulking in gateways, and thrusting out their uncombed heads and scowling eyes, others crossing and recrossing, and constantly jostling both horse and man to provoke a quarrel, others stealing away, and summoning their companions in a low whistle. Once, even in that short passage, there was the noise of scuffling, and the clash of swords behind him, but Will, who knew the city and its ways, kept straight on and scarcely turned his head. The streets being unpaved, the rain of the night before had converted them into a perfect quagmire, which the splashing water spouts from the gables, and the filth and offal cast from the different houses, swelled in no small degree. These odious matters being left to putrefy in the close and heavy air, emitted an insupportable stench, to which every court and passage poured forth. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.